The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 6th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, columnist at Salon, the proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo. You may even know her as Digby. Also on the program today, head of the American Constitution Society, I should say president of the American Constitution Society, and former senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold, will join us. Meanwhile, the Senate to try and vote next week on codifying a woman's right to choose an abortion in this country. It will not pass filibuster muster, as it were. California races to become an abortion refuge. Louisiana Republicans advance a bill to say life begins at fertilization.
Oh, and it's murder, too, if you get an abortion.
In wake of the Supreme Court ruling to force Boston to fly a Christian flag, the Satanic Temple seeks the same flag-waving rights. Meanwhile, Texas Governor Glenn Abbott will seek to overturn a 1982 Supreme Court decision now that they've made it clear they don't care about precedent that obligates public schools to educate all students in the state, regardless of their immigrant status or any other status for that matter. Meanwhile, the U.S. adds 428,000 jobs in April. Still, millions upon millions upon millions of jobs are available. Which begs the question, wait, what is the problem again with immigrants in this country? They're stealing our what? More civilians evacuated from Mariupol Steelworks. However, Ukrainian fighters there refuse to surrender. Back in the Senate, 16 Democrats join Republicans in trying to undermine a return to the Iran nuke deal. And eight states' attorney generals call on Joe Biden to cancel student debt already. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday. Thus, you will see I am wearing a soft-collared shirt, as is my tradition. And, of course, Emma Vigeland is here with us, as always, wearing some type of mock collared shirt.
Yeah, this is called a Henley. This is what this is called.
I don't know about such
Emma things. Wearing her black Henley that F's with the video, the color on the video.
Audacity. I'm not going to stop.
And the big button.
I've fixed that, I think.
Can we fix the screen so that we're not like the we'll measure it up? Sorry about that. I get distracted.
Sam likes when the panel's like this part.
Yes, it doesn't make
the lines.
This much shorter than Emma. I am not. There we go.
So, all right. Close.
There we go.
Maybe up a little bit.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. All right. I will zoom out a little bit. We got to figure out a way of actually resolving
that.
Wait,
but that made it worse. All right.
No, no. That's
okay. Okay.
At least it's close.
We might need a sound.
It's not like, hey. And here is Emma Vigeland.
It's Gollum.
Yep.
I think we need a Sam in studio and a Sam upstate shot might be the way to keep that one.
There we
consistent.
Go. Yes, exactly. Two different presets.
Keep that low key.
It is Friday. We got a lot to talk about, obviously. And we're going to have more debate about the leak a little bit on this program today.
Why?
Because I do think it is important. And I was going to bring it up with both our guests today, actually. But I do think it's important that there is political value. Again, I think it's well established my regard for the Supreme Court as an institution. It would be hard to make it less than it is now. But I'm more concerned with the political value of and the mobilization around this decision, which is going to come down in June. And I think there is increasing evidence that this leak was perpetrated. And in fact, not just this leak, but other leaks from the Supreme Court around this decision perpetrated by a conservative on the court. And by on the court, I mean within the court, a clerk, or I don't think a justice would have done it, but a clerk. But I doubt a conservative a clerk would have done it fully without maybe consulting one of the justices. We will never hear about that if that's the case. But if it is a member of the majority using this as a way of keeping wobbly conservatives on the court from changing their mind or signing on to a more moderate decision about Roe v. Wade, if the power on the court used a leak to enforce their power, it does far more damage to me, in my mind, to the institution, and it does far more damage to the validity, the supposed validity of the decision, and it will create more outrage. That's my.
Okay.
All right. Well, there
we'll
you go.
See.
There you
yeah.
go. Yeah, Emma doesn't care.
No, I care. I mean, it's my job to care, right? So I care.
No, you don't have to care.
Okay.
You don't have to care.
I don't particularly care that much.
All right. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Well, that's the quickest thing I could find.
Okay.
But what's also interesting at this point is the Republicans are on the defensive about this ruling in the same way they would be defensive when it comes out in June, because they know it is going to be incredibly unpopular, and it is almost as if they have pulled the pin out of a process that I don't think they can stop at this point. Because the logic of a ban on abortion starts to lead to a lot of things that are going to become increasingly repugnant to average normal Americans, as measured by just the polling and also their sanity. Because if you ban abortion because it is murder, then you must arrest and prosecute the people who participate in that murder. That would be the mother. That would be the doctor. And if you believe, as we're seeing evidenced in other states, that life begins at fertilization, which incidentally is actually before conception.
Yeah.
Fertilization takes place before conception because the fertilized egg then needs to launch to embed itself in the uterus when we have conception. But now we have laws that are already starting to advance about fertilization. IVF, you have a problem. You have a problem with some contraceptives at that point,
mm-hmm.
which prevent the fertilized egg.
Morning after pill?
Not just the morning after pill.
No.
Actually, like IUD.
Yeah.
Will narrow the lining of the uterus in such a way that the fertilized egg cannot embed there. Here is, and so they are terribly nervous in some respects, even though a huge percentage of them is horribly excited. They've never really contemplated. This is almost like, obviously I'm not making an analogy from what it does in terms of rights, but this is like, you know, that moment where like, we're going to repeal the ACA. And then what do we do? Hadn't really thought that part out.
Well, the dogs caught the car, as you'd say, yep. Or the kid who wanted a cookie is now just in a candy store by himself or locked in there or something like that. What are you going to do? What are you going to choose? What tactic are you going to take? I mean, and it's not just going to be abortion and contraceptive decisions. You mentioned the Abbott. They're going to try to get migrant kids not to be allowed in schools, overturning past precedents that they don't agree with. And yeah, the Supreme Court has sent out a bat signal for all of these kinds of things.
Here is Peter Ducey, always reliably delivering the talking points of the Republican Party in the form of a question at the White House. And this is where it's going to head with the Republicans. Here, play this clip.
The president's position on choice has evolved over time, so just checking for his official position. Does he support any limits on abortion right now?
Peter, the president has spoken, has talked about his position many times. He supports the right of a woman to make choices about her own body with her doctor.
But I know that one of the Democrats that he endorsed and who won their primary this week, Tim Ryan, said yesterday that he does not support any limits on abortion. Is that where the president's thinking is now?
The president has stated his view many times.
So does the president support abortion up until the moment of birth?
The president has spoken about this many times, Peter, and I would refer you to his own comments about abortion and a woman's right to choose and make decisions about her body with her doctor, which is what any of those women would do. Go ahead.
The idea of abortion up to the moment of birth is a total fallacy. They started this when New York passed its Reproductive Health Act, which allowed practitioners to perform an abortion on a patient who is 24 weeks or more away from the start of a pregnancy. Roe v. Wade protects the right of a woman to get an abortion up to 24 weeks and then allows states to curtail that to the extent that they want to. Even in blue state New York, the change that was there, because prior to that, abortions after 24 weeks were allowed only when the mother's life was at risk. They opened that up to protect the patient's life or health. So if a pregnancy would materially impact a person's health, they were allowed to get an abortion. And who makes that determination? Well, of course, we should allow the members of the Senate to make the determination
naturally
as to how a woman's health or a patient's health, always, this should always be the case, in every instance, when someone is facing a medical situation, we should allow the U.S. Senate or the legislature of a state to step in and determine if this really constitutes a significant enough impairment of your health.
Well, you're calling the woman a patient. She's not a patient. She's a vessel for the baby. That's what this is, right? I mean, you're like abortion up until the point of birth. That's not a thing.
That's misogynistic hysteria.
Yeah, no, that is that means that right, exactly, but they're trying to get that out there. But then that opens the door to other questions about, say, a baby dies close to birth or in birth, right? Was the mother an appropriately pristine vessel for that baby? Did she have a glass of wine? Did she go to work too much, work too many hours? Was it too stressful? Did she take the right kinds of nutrients? Because you can make a case if you have an overly aggressive prosecutor in one of these red states that that was an abortion by her actions because the vessel was impure.
The other situation where you could allow an abortion would be if the fetus is not viable. And again, of course, we want the Senate of the United States or the Republican majority of a state legislature to determine the viability of every fetus and overrule the licensed, certified, authorized healthcare practitioner. In every instance, of course, we want that. And we know that because they did a test run with Terry Schiavo 15 years ago about their ability to make these assessments while sitting in the Senate chambers or in their legislative chambers. I'm going to take a break in a moment, and we will bring on Heather Parton, or Digby. But first, a couple of words from our sponsors. Today's show, sponsored by Sunset Lake Sabade. Go to sunsetlakesabade.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST for 20% off. Of course, big tech is always trying to censor me, so I can't say the words, the full words, the correct pronunciation of those three letters, Sabade, or Charlie Baker.
Yeah.
Dalton.
Or C, then B, then.
You're really tempting the big tech. On my new Substack, I'll be able to say that all the time. But the bottom line is, look, they have tinctures. They have smokables. They have smokables that you mix with your other smokables. They have keef. They have smokables you can smoke alone, like the pre-rolls, which I enjoy. Had one last weekend. That's the way I now sometimes, finish off a nice meal or relaxing.
Yeah.
They have gummies. They have the tinctures which help me sleep. They have arnica and Sabade salve. I've been told to pronounce it salve.
Salve.
Or salve. I don't know. I can't even remember now how I'm supposed to pronounce that. But they also have fudge and Sabade infused coffee. All of these products are excellent, and they are grown without pesticides. They use integrated pest management. They also use regenerative farming practices. They have great business practices. Just raised thousands of dollars during their 420 sale for the Innocence Project.
Wow.
They're movement partners. This is the place to go if you buy Sabade. And if you've never tried Sabade, this is the product you want. You can see the integrity of the product. They have third-party testers, and they put all these documents on their website. Just one of my favorite sponsors and one of my favorite products. I use this, six times a week in one form or another.
I know.
Well, maybe seven times, actually.
I'm becoming too dependent on the tincture for sleep.
It's very helpful.
Yeah.
And also good for working out when your muscles sore.
Oh, nice.
I read that in the Washington Post. That's how I did. So check it out. 20% off, coupon code LEFTISBEST. And lastly, if you run a business, you want to have full knowledge of what your sales are doing, and you can do such with Shopify. It is an all-in-one commerce platform. Start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, can synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Shopify powers millions of businesses from their first sale to their full scale. You can reach customers online and across social networks. They got an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Plus, you gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting and conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is possibility, powered by Shopify. And I will say this, we obviously, our retail portion of this business, when we sell our merch, is not huge for us, but we needed something that was easy to set up, easily tracks what's going on, and Shopify was incredibly easy to set up. People know my technical limitations, and we were able to get this thing up quick and easy, and it's been super effective. And if we ever decided to become just a merch store, Shopify would make it much easier for us to do that. Go to shopify.com/majority, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/majority right now. That's S-H-O-P-I-F-Y, shopify.com/majority. All right, quick break, and when we come back, Heather Parton, or as you may know her, Digby.
We are back.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Joining us, Heather Parton, or Digby. And you know that's the case because of this song.
Are you ready for some pee-pee?
Go, ladies and gentlemen. Been a while since we've played that tune. Always excited to have you here, Heather. Of course, I'm here with Emma Vigeland, and I don't know. In many respects, you and I have been talking in this manner for 10-15 years, maybe. Certainly, I've been reading your work for at least 16. No. I'm sorry, 18, 19 years or somewhere around there. And in many respects, this is like the end of a saga in some way. I mean, it's going to start a new one, but this has been the golden chalice for the Republican Party. And I don't know. What are your first thoughts about this?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, certainly since we've been talking about this, this has been on the agenda, although I've always felt that the Democrats didn't really want to talk about it. And when I first started writing writing online, the big move was for the Democratic Party to move toward the anti-abortion position. And, you know, there were, I don't know if you remember this, but I mean, there was a huge movement to do that in the early to mid 2000s.
I mentioned they this the other day, Hillary Clinton was a big part of that.
Yeah. I mean, there was a serious political strategy that had developed around, you know, I mean, they were still, you know, using the circumlocution of, you know, safe, legal, and rare. But they were really hitting hard on the rare part and demonizing abortion in many ways. And, you know, talking a lot about how, you know, it was irreligious to be pro-choice and going on and, you know, saying we have to appeal to these people who genuinely believe that this is murder and, you know, we've got to do this. And it was, you know, shocking to me. I mean, I remember at the time it was one of the motivating things for me to start writing about this stuff because it was driving me absolutely crazy because it was clear then as now that the majority of Americans were, you know, approved of Roe versus Wade. And Roe versus Wade has compromises built into it. You were just talking about it. You know, the first trimester that was right. It was called a balance. It's a balancing act that they used to come up with the decision from the very beginning. It was the first trimester. We're going to say that there can be no restrictions. Second trimester, states have a right to impose some health restrictions. And in the third trimester, it needs to be about the health and, you know, life of the mother. That was built into it. It's not as if this was some, like, you know, they're saying, you know, they want abortion up to the moment of birth. I mean, that's not Roe versus Wade and never has been from the beginning and it isn't now. And the vast majority of Americans always agreed with that, you know, that ruling. And the idea that suddenly they were going to use it, I mean, this is the part that bothered me, was that this was such a cynical use of this issue. They knew that it had it was, you know, a constitutional right and had been decided. So they felt like they could play around with it. You know, okay, well, let's give them a little bit here and there. Let's try and appeal to some of those anti-abortion voters. Let's try and get those people. And, you know, there's a culture war and maybe we can use this to our advantage. It was a cynical move on the part of Democrats to do that because they felt that it was safe. So there wasn't anything really at stake. They didn't feel like that the big loss was going to be there. And those of us who were following it, certainly people that pro-choice activists were, you know, beside themselves going, you don't think that there's anything at stake. You don't think that this could go back. Even at the time, they were packing the Supreme Court with anti-choice justices. We knew what they were up to. And yet there was still this political game that was going on. Well, I think we've had a little wake-up call this week, haven't we?
Well, frankly,
I mean, you know, a little late, yeah. But...
I mean, frankly, it seems to me that they still were, despite the fact that it seemed quite clear, Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, et cetera, the justices that were appointed under Trump, that they would attempt to do this. The Democrats have zero plan. And there's been no laying of the groundwork about how do we pressure Manchin and Sinema? Are we going to look at codifying this through the Senate, rolling back the filibuster in this area? Like they're proposing this legislation that will go nowhere. Where was the plan, knowing that it was a 6-3 conservative Supreme Court and that this was a distinct possibility?
Well, that's a good question. They certainly seem to be caught flat-footed this week. And my assumption is that they believed, and I think the Republicans believed this too. And I'm sorry to just be pushing right into politics here, but, you know, you guys covered the moral side of that very well. But the Republicans, I think, and the Democrats, and certainly the media, didn't think they were going to do it. They thought that they were going to go along, that, you know, Roberts would pull together a majority and maybe there's a slim chance that will still happen. But what they thought was that the 13 week or the 15 week, you know, after 15 week ban in the Mississippi case, that's the case that's being decided, that they would go along with that, that they were just going to chip away at it again, that this was just going to be another one of these cases, which has been going on for decades now, you know, going back to Casey and, you know, all the rest, which they sort of slowly chip away at it, but they wouldn't really, you know, go for the whole enchilada. I think that's what they thought. And I don't think there have been any plans. I mean, I think they thought, well, it'll come out in June. There'll be some protests about the Mississippi ruling. There'll be, you know, we'll try and get the gals riled up a little bit. But I don't think they really recognized the true danger of this court. They didn't recognize it when they were, when Mitch McConnell was doing what he was doing with the open Scalia seat. They haven't recognized it going all the way back to Alito, to be honest. Because you, Sam, you remember
yes.
the fight that we tried to put up over Alito because we knew he was a raving nutcase. And, you know, the Democrats just kind of, well, you know, what are we going to do? And again, you know, so they didn't, I think they just didn't think it was going to happen. And now it has, and everybody's caught flat-footed by it, including the Republicans. By the way, I think that they're also kind of, you know,
I think this dynamic, what it reminds me of is, you know, our friend here, Guy Lawson, wrote a book called Octopus. It was about the story of Sam Israel, who was a huge defrauder on Wall Street. And he had this hedge fund that he was defrauding people. And he himself ended up getting caught in a fake scam where he was told that there was a sort of separate international Federal Reserve Bank for really rich people who could get free money from there. And he was so corrupted by Wall Street that the idea of this other corruption existing made total sense to him. I mean, it's like, of course there is, because I know everything is rigged anyways. And on some level, I feel like the Democrats did not believe that these people on the Supreme Court would actually do this because they also have been engaged in this sort of like platitudinous, like we can always say that we're going to do this. We're going to say we're going to do card check. We're going to say we're going to do this. And the Republicans are operating that way too. They say that to their base and that feeds them, but we always got to keep the carrot out there. And my sense is, like, again, you know, this is we have a specific generation of Democratic leaders who are operating under politics as it was done 40 years ago. And I made this point the other day that Bill Clinton, his first election to office was in 1978, running for attorney general in Arkansas, 5 years after Roe v. Wade. Like, their notion of how politics operate seems to come from a different century, because it does come from a different century. And they can't seem to, you know, like the lack of preparation of this, that it would never come to pass. I mean, of course it was going to come to pass. I mean, everybody, like, it was the writing.
I mean, when I read the headline, I just thought, you know, it was that feeling in your gut where I knew it was going to happen, and just it still was devastating when it happened. But if you're reading the tea leaves, how do you not have a contingency plan based on, like, the immense probability of it, basically? Sorry to interrupt.
But that's the only way that you cannot have a plan is if you are just sort of operating in a completely different universe of, like, with different, like, political
their plan
laws
was let's
of
fundraise. Let's fundraise off of this. We're going to fundraise off it.
In the same way that the Republicans are. We're just always going to, it's never going to happen. And, you know, and even if John Roberts prevails, which I don't think he will now, I think the leak is was meant to prevent him from prevailing.
Agreed.
And softening, because, I mean, Amy Coney Barrett is not going to be able to show up anywhere, nor Brett Kavanaugh. He doesn't want to be protested by conservative protesters out in front of his. Much rather be protested by, you know, the rabble, the hippy dippies who, you know, had a problem with him, you know, just loving beer back in the day. But even if Roberts had prevailed, it was just a matter of time anyways. Like, you know, there's no harm in having a plan before that. It really is shocking in that respect.
There's an election coming up. There's an election coming in which the Democrats are looking at a potentially devastating loss of the Congress in big, huge numbers. The idea that they would not see that this decision coming down, I mean, this is just pure cynical politics on my part to put it this way, but it's true that, you know, first of all, their only hope of winning in the fall is to make the election a choice between the raving lunatics on the right and the sort of, you know, tepid, impotent Democrats on the other side. And, you know, that's all, rather than a referendum on what's going on, people are in a sour mood. They don't feel good about the country for a lot of good reasons and some not so good. But regardless, on their hands, even if the Mississippi vote, you know, decision had come down just, you know, banning abortion after 15 weeks, it's still, you still would have thought that they would have something in the hopper, you know, yeah, to kind of run out with this. Because, I mean, look, first of all, they're bleeding, you know, voters under 30. You know, people who are just the young voters are just throwing up their hands going, what am I bothering with politics for? This is ridiculous. These people, you know, they can't do anything. So here you have an issue that affects them very, very directly. Men and women, and they're all very, very pro-choice, very pro-Roe. And, you know, this is one of those issues. So I don't even get the politics of it. And just on a sheer moral level, it's just, it's repulsive to me. It's repulsive to me that you could sit there and play politics. And I felt this way during, well, for instance, during the ACA negotiations that were going on over Obamacare.
Yep.
This was the issue that ended up being the bargaining chip. They played it horribly. It was political malpractice. I put that in my piece this morning about the Stupak Amendment. Some of you may remember what that was, but it was a disgusting moment in which the Democrats sat there and went, "Well, what have we got we can give these people? Ah, abortion coverage. Right. We'll give them that." That's basically what happened. And there were a few women in the Congress who, you know, stood up and went, "This is outrageous. You know, you're playing with, you know, my body, my future, my rights." And they kind of went, "Well, you know, got to do something." And that was basically what happened. And you know, this has been going on for a very, very long time. Well, I'm sorry. It's off the table now, guys. Abortion is no longer something you can play with because it's no longer going to be a right. And we're going to have to deal with the fact that women all over the country are going to be suffering. Something like 42% to 45% of women in this country are going to lose their right in the states that are going to ban abortion when this decision comes down. So, you know, good luck with that. You know, you better find, but they better get moving pretty quick on finding some kind of a strategy to deal with this. And having a vote on it in the, you know, a sort of a show vote isn't really going to get the job done.
No, not at all. And I question the timing and the way that they're going about doing this. Heather, we just need you to reconnect because you're frozen. But when you reconnect, that's okay. We just need you to hop off and then reconnect. But when you come back, I want to ask you also about the notion of like a ban on abortion. Like, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, like there's this sort of, well, we'll deal with it, you know, 24 states or 26 states and, you know, people can cross the state lines and this and that. But the next step is a ban, a federal ban.
Yeah,
why don't you disconnect and hop back on?
Okay,
and talk about
I'll
that.
Be right back.
Folks, bear with us. Just having a little bit of technical difficulty. It's one of the things that happen. We need to synchronize the two shot with the three shot in terms of where we land here, too. We need to do that because we're equal. We're even on the
slouch again.
There we go.
That looks great.
All right. Let's bring Heather in.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
No worries. Let's talk about this possibility of a ban. And again, you know, I want to go back before we get to the ban. You know, you had said you remind us in the early aughts, there was a significant move amongst some Democrats to sort of say, like, we need to reach out to anti-choice people and soften our position in some way, which It was ridiculous. You mentioned it was ridiculous in one sense, in that like there's no, you can't like placate fundamentalists. It's also a fundamental, no pun intended, misreading of what the agenda is. You know, like this is not about, and we mentioned this earlier,
Louisiana is advancing a bill to say that life literally begins at fertilization. Not even at conception, at fertilization. This is not, and it has never been, about abortion. It's certainly never been about protecting babies or life, because they got no problem with capital punishment. So it's not just a protecting innocent life, whatever that means. It is about control, and really embedded in that what they say, like, these women want to have sex without consequences. Sorry, sweetie, that's not the way that life works. And what are the consequences? Like, it's like you need to pay for this activity in some fashion. And I mean, that's what that means. You need to pay for it. And who is being paid, it being paid to? It is not being paid to fate. There's somebody who's going to receive that payment, and that is men. It's you're going to pay into the system, the hierarchy we have established here. And if you're going to have sex and engage in something that could procreate, and we're going to make sure that it does, then you need to basically be at home where you belong. And I think we all know that the vast majority of people, not everybody, is going to have sex at one point in their lives. And approximately half of those will be women. And a certain percentage of those, a fairly high percentage, will be able to conceive at one point or another in their life. And so you can't negotiate with these fundamentalists, particularly over abortion, because it's not about abortion at the end of the day. Abortion is one element of a larger project. And it's also bad politics in terms of your own people and in protecting this moment. I mean, it's so indicative of the way I feel like the politics on so many different issues have gone. Like there is almost a willful misunderstanding of what or inability to conceive, again, forgive the pun, of what's actually going on behind this.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's very obvious right now, as far as I can tell, when you're looking at this flailing about on the part of the Democrats on how to deal with this election that's coming up. They seem to be simply, you know, I mean, they're completely paralyzed, as far as I can tell. I mean, this is, you know, the January 6th committee is coming up, and maybe those public hearings will have it. But other than that, I see absolutely no energy behind anything, really, you know, and a lot of sort of open discussion in the press about how, well, we're screwed, you know, sorry, yeah, it looks like it's not going to work. And that's about it. And, you know, that is, again, an inability to see, as you put it, you know, what is going on. As you know, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, said in the wake of this abortion decision, you know, wake up, America, look around, see what's going on. You know, they're taking away your rights now. And you know, they're serious. It's actually happening. It's not, this is the stuff that's going, I mean, you know, you would think that the last 6 years of politics would have awakened everyone to the stakes and what's really going on. But apparently it hasn't. And there's been this idea, well, you know, it'll all work out, or I don't know, we'll go back to normal or something. And we're not going back to normal. They are continuing. I mean, somebody said this week, and I can't remember who it was, pointed out that there have been three justices who were put on the court by presidents who didn't win the popular vote. All three of them were put on the court by Donald Trump. I mean, these are not these norms that everybody's, you know, like, which is kind of ironic since all these Republicans are now screaming about the Supreme Court norms, you know. Give me a break. We don't go to talk to Mitch McConnell about Supreme Court norms, because he kind of, you know, he went first on that one. But I mean, this inability to sort of understand exactly what the stakes are and how things are, you know, hurtling out of control is still astonishing to me. And, you know, it's been coming on for a long time. This isn't new. It's, you know, it's been what we've seen, as you just point out, back in the 2000s, we saw this coming, where they were kind of getting ready to kind of jettison the idea that they were the pro-choice party. They were ready to do that and to kind of make this a bipartisan effort, essentially, to overturn Roe versus Wade. I'm not sure they ever thought it was going to happen. Doesn't seem like they did. Maybe the Republicans didn't think so either, but it is now. And it's just it's another sign of what's happening in the, you know, in our politics generally. You know, this is that we have a radical, you know, overtaking of our, you know, of how we assumed our system was going to work. And this court we have two justices on the court that are signed on to this decision who were illegitimate. I mean, essentially, they're illegitimate. The first one was the seat stolen by McConnell on the Scalia seat. The second one was Amy Coney Barrett, who was rushed through in the last 6 weeks before an election. Both of those are illegitimate justices, and they're making the difference on this big, big issue. And they will make the difference on many more issues to come.
And we should add that the seat that Mitch McConnell refused to allow for any type of even nomination to exist, really, fundamentally, or, you know, even to meet with the nominee and Amy Coney Barrett, that was a Senate that was ruled by a party that garnered something like 40 million less votes nationally than the Democrats. And so you have two instances sort of layered on top of each other. It's sort of like a minoritarian rule parfait, if you will, where, you know, and we have at least four states, I think, that occurred to me off the top of my head, where we have a dynamic where gerrymandering, you know, these state legislatures are, again, same dynamic. Over 50% Democratic people go in, pull the lever for a Democrat in their state assembly, and end up with far less than 50% representation in the state house. And we're going to see more of that in the context of, you know, following the redistricting that's taking place this year. I mean, I think the last time you and I talked, we were like, oh, there seems to be some type of parity that came out because a state like New York had redistricted, you know, and in response to Republicans around the country. And that has been what appears to be, I think it's not final quite yet, but it's about to be. That's been overturned by the good government in these blue states. And so we have minoritarian rule in a lot of places in this country. And so this isn't a question of, like, throw it to the voters, as if you could throw to the voters, you know, any sort of constitutional right that people have.
Exactly. That's one of the most fatuous aspects of the Alito draft decision, was this idea, well, we're just going to give it to the people. They will be the ones to decide. First of all, you know, rights aren't decided by majority rule. I mean, that's just not how this works. And in fact, our whole, you know, system of government, the Bill of Rights, and if you look at the Declaration of Independence, the country is founded on the idea of inalienable human rights. And that is not decided by majority rule on a whim, on a case by case, on a state by state basis. And of course, the whole idea of, you know, Alito's, you know, going back to the states' rights rationale and saying, well, it will go back to the states and nobody needs to worry. This has been, that's part of the, been the anti-choice movement's sort of, you know, fatuous rationale from the very beginning, because they don't really believe that. I mean, you can't believe that. You can't say, oh, I believe abortion is murder, but it's okay if California murders people. I just want my state not to murder people. I mean, that makes no sense. So, you know, that was always just a way station. You know, they'll use states' rights to get there. And then, as you put it, and before I, you know, had to drop out there, we were talking about the idea that there's going to be a national ban. Of course there is. And the Alito rationale of states' rights, which is completely ridiculous, and he doesn't even believe it himself, although he'll use it because he's this very, very cynical political operative, the minute they get the chance, they're going to pass a national ban or, you know, some very draconian kind of law. They're already talking. They were talking about it before the leak. 2 days before the leak, the Washington Post had an article about how the right, now talk about preparation, right? Unlike the Democrats, who are sitting around going, gee, I hope nothing bad happens, that they were already planning to do to working with the Washington Post reported that they had activists and members of Congress working together on putting together a national abortion ban. That was the next step in their plan. And so, you know, they, of course, that's what they're going to do. Joni Ernst said it yesterday. She said, yeah, we're talking about it. You know, we might go for 6 weeks. That was their, you know, we might go for the 6 weeks. And then there's some, you know, some jabbering on the edges saying it. So, well, maybe we ought to think about maybe doing something for women because it's going to look bad if we ban abortion across the country and we don't do any kind of support for the women and their children that were, you know, the forced childbirth that we're going to inflict on people. So, you know, they had it in mind absolutely to do a national ban. That's never been in question. Of course, that's what they want to do. It makes no sense otherwise. Even they aren't that crazy. And, you know, you're hearing rumblings from people. I think it was Kevin Cramer in North Dakota, the senator from North Dakota, who said, well, I'm not really comfortable with the idea of women being allowed, of pregnant women being allowed to cross state lines. They're pregnant in North Dakota to go next door and get an abortion. Well, yes, they're talking about doing travel bans that would not be unprecedented. Travel ban is a new thing among right wingers. So they're talking about trying to do something like that. All these things are leading to the idea of a national ban against. Yeah, there's no way you could enforce that kind of travel ban, right? I mean, they're going to have checkpoints at the border. I mean, you know, come on. So that's what they're talking about, and that is where we're ending up. And it will not surprise me at all to see Alito and that same majority, who are now basing it on states' rights. We just don't believe this is a federal issue. It's not a constitutional issue. It was wrongly decided, blah, blah, blah. It should go to the states where the people can decide. And, you know, women can vote against, you know, it if that's what they believe in, et cetera, et cetera. All the stuff that Alito said in his opinion. And then he will turn on a dime and say that a national ban is constitutional.
Oh, yeah. I think he's already set that up.
No doubt about it.
I think he's already set that up. And people should also keep this in mind. If there's any doubt that they will pass a national ban, contemplate the Republican lawmaker who is in the majority in the Senate, in the majority in the House, and has a Republican in the White House. Which one of them has the intestinal fortitude to say, no, we shouldn't have a ban? Like, which one of them?
Yeah.
And it's not even just like, you know, sheer, you know, like courage. It's like, in whose interest in this Republican Party would it be to not support a ban on abortion federally? I mean, honestly, like, I, for the life of me, Susan Collins, maybe. Maybe Susan Collins.
Oh, she'd be concerned about one, but I doubt whether or not she'd be concerned.
At the same time, yep. You know, consistency is really important,
right?
And
the court will have the justices will have assured her that, you know, they will not uphold a national ban, because I'm sure that's the, you know, they would tell her that. So she'll be fine.
There's just no way. And I don't know when Collins comes up for a vote again. Is it in 2026?
Well, she just got.
Yeah.
Just won.
So yeah. This vote, which will take place in 2025, you know, I think, well, let me put it this way. There's an over 50% chance, I would say, maybe a 50% chance that there will be a vote on a ban in 2025. And the idea that Susan Collins is going to decide to retire at that moment and vote against it. or the idea that Mitch McConnell will say we're not going to break the filibuster to do this if we only have 55 votes or something like that. Like, forget about it. The ban is going to come if they get all three branches of government. And there doesn't seem to be any, like, you know, I don't know. I always feel like they must have a plan B. And they never do. It's stunning.
It really is. I mean, you know, this has been going on for a long time. It's also, you know, it's not just on this issue, although this issue is, you know, I mean, it's acute because it is literally the reversal of a constitutional right, which is just not something that we've seen. I mean, that's just not something that America has done. I mean, we've done a lot of horrible things, and the Supreme Court's done a lot of horrible things. I mean, one of the things that said so, I think it was Adam Serwer in The Atlantic who wrote about the Alito decision using Plessy versus Ferguson, comparing Roe versus Wade to Plessy versus Ferguson, which is, of course, something that they've done forever. You know, that was a wrongly decided, horrible Supreme Court case. It needs to be reversed. You know, that's a precedent that cannot stand. But the basis of Plessy versus Ferguson was states' rights, that, you know, that states had a right to discriminate against against black people. It was the basis of Jim Crow. And they're comparing that to Roe versus Wade while doing the exact same thing that Plessy versus Ferguson was all about. I mean, it's the kind of thing that gives you a headache just trying to sort it all out. The contradiction, the internal contradictions in their arguments. But of course, we have learned in the last few years, if we didn't know before, that there is no need for consistency on the right. They don't have to make sense at all, really. Nobody cares.
It's consistent insofar as it's consistent with a reactionary mind, which is a constant battle to return to previously held hierarchies, essentially, in the guise of it being counterculture. I mean, this is what, we can see this, everybody, all of your favorite conservative outlets are doing this at every moment. You know, that's what the cancel culture is all about. Like, I'm going against the grain. We need to get back to the place where, women are chattel, and where, black people can't really speak out in this way, and we don't have to have, diversity. I mean, that's all it is. But
And I like the right wing spin on this, which is the Donald Trump rally, where it's kind of their Woodstock. And they dress up in costumes, and they all get in, and they think they're real radical. And they're doing this sort of, they're putting a 60s counterculture spin on their counterculture. And that's, I think that that's, point. It's sickening, but it is what it is.
Heather Parton Digby, as always, a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It was fun. Thanks. See you later, guys.
All things considered. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Russ Feingold. He is the president of the American Constitution Society and, of course, former senator from Wisconsin. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Joining us now, former senator from Wisconsin and current president of the American Constitution Society, Russ Feingold. Thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Thanks, Sam and Emma. Good to be here. Thank you.
Let me start with this, and then I'll go into what I was originally going to start with. Have we ever, Heather Parton just brought this up in our last interview. Have we ever had assuming that this ends up being the ruling, and in fact, even assuming it goes down to 15 weeks on the Mississippi, have we ever had in this country such an official reversal of a constitutional right?
Sam, I think not. I mean, you know, maybe there's some historians that would dispute that, but, you know, you can go back to Dred Scott, I suppose. But, you know, essentially, this is not the role the court has played. The court has not played the role of holding out a critical reproductive right to women for 50 years and then yanking it back suddenly. This is unheard of, even in things that would be of shorter or less precedential value. But this is 50 years. I was just my summer after high school when I remember I was working on a television show, cable TV, and it's in its infancy. And the guy that was a cameraman said, I can't be here next week because I've got to take somebody to New York to get an abortion. And I didn't really understand what that was all about. But that was that long ago, about 50 years, when this horrible situation was addressed. And it's a tragic day.
Do you think that we're not headed? I mean, let's assume, again, and we'll talk about sort of like more of the internal workings and whether these assumptions are necessarily correct. And I want to talk to you actually about the leak itself, too. But assuming that this ends up being a complete reversal of Roe v. Wade, do you think there's any chance that a Republican-controlled Senate, House, and presidency wouldn't do a federal ban on abortion so that you would not have stories of like going from Wisconsin to New York because that's off the table at that point?
Well, I fear they would try it. I mean, obviously it would be challenged. It would be challenged on the basis that it's overriding the state's ability to make their own decisions. In other words, throw their own rationale back at them. But I don't think there's any doubt. You know, when I was in the Senate, I was chairman of ranking member of the Constitution Subcommittee on the Judiciary Committee. You know, they tried to push a constitutional amendment to ban abortion. Of course, that's much more difficult because it requires 2/3 of both houses. Or, and one thing they're trying to do is have a constitutional convention, which would allow them to try to do this in a much more easy way. But I don't think there's any question that these people will not stop at this. They don't want any place in America to be safe for a woman to make this choice. And we have to face the reality that there's a ruthless quality to it that is essentially unprecedented.
What does it say that about the way that the Republican Party is operating in this country, that abortion in and of itself and Roe v. Wade, the decision is so popular, and yet there is a sprint by these Republican-controlled states to ban abortion in the wake of this decision and leading up to it as well. And there's seemingly no regard for it. And is it just a confidence based on the fact that they've gerrymandered these states and there's so much money on their side that they don't think it's going to matter?
Well, you hit the nail on the head when you referred to money. The forces that are pushing this have to do with big money forces in this country that have had this agenda for a long time. And frankly, you know, to me, this isn't even the Republican Party anymore. This is a party that has a very different agenda. You know, Justice Blackmun was a Republican appointed justice who authored the Roe v. Wade decision. And, you know, going back, Chief Justice Warren was a Republican governor from Bakersfield, California, who led the Brown v. Board decision. So essentially, the Republican Party has been hijacked by the Trump viewpoint and by an extreme emphasis on these kinds of social issues. And, I dated back in particular to the 2004 election, where President Bush was in a lot of trouble because of the way in which the Iraq war was going. And his people figured out, well, we got to get the evangelicals out. And that means guns, God, and gays. And it also meant, of course, anti-choice. And so what they did is bring in this big group of people who Trump was clever enough to realize if he got them, he could actually what I consider to be an unfriendly takeover of the Republican Party. That's what's happened. This is not the Republican Party of moderation. And frankly, the Republican Party used to stand for some respect for personal privacy and liberty. This is the opposite of that.
But with all due respect, isn't this a conversation that we could have had, well, like you say, at least 16 years ago? I would argue prior to that, because, you know, I mean, this started with Ronald Reagan, didn't it? I mean, the fact that it took them this trajectory, they were on this trip since 1980, it seems to me. Maybe before that, I guess, but it started. They had a they had someone who was espousing this in the White House 40 years ago, and it took them a while to get there. And maybe at one point, the inmates started to run the asylum, and I don't think that the Democratic Party was quite aware of that, frankly. But this, you know. It seemed obvious to me, and you know, I'm looking right now at a piece from well, I mean, I remember this too from 2006. But for the first time in your career, and I think you could have been described as a Senate institutionalist in some respects, or at least particularly when it came to the right of a president to pick their judicial nominees, and you gave. If I remember correctly, sort of a de facto deference to that. But you voted against Alito. I mean, you saw this coming on some level. And, you know, I think one of the problems is that the Democratic Party has been too quick to say that this is that Donald Trump was sort of like, you know, hijacked the party as opposed to the party sort of served itself and formed itself into a way where Donald Trump could be the head of it.
Well, I think that's fair because it was a gradual process. You know, look, it's very hard to say people could have seen this coming. Ronald Reagan was not pro-life. You know, he was pro-choice. But yet he created this view of the federal government that sort of demonized everything the government did. And that opened the door to sort of cause some of Bush's top people to say, well, what we need to do is bring in these other people, who these evangelicals and others who may not have had a political affiliation, and they did it. But, you know, they made a deal with the devil. They basically was a sorcerer's apprentice kind of thing, where they brought him in thinking that the establishment could control them. I mean, look who's the leading person standing up to Donald Trump. Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney. That establishment, that Bush establishment, lost complete control of the Republican Party when Trump came in. But yes, the conditions were set before, and you're right. I made a distinction as a senator. My belief was that the general norm should be that people should get their nominations for the cabinet unless there's something wrong with the person ethically, and that you could take a strict test with judges, but that there should be some deference to the president. But I had to make a distinction between the two Bush nominees. I voted for Chief Justice Roberts because I thought, you're not going to do better than this guy because he cares about the institution, and he's proving that. I'm mad as a wet hen at him for his role on the voting rights stuff. But look at what he's doing. He's the only rational person in the group. On the other hand, I met with Sam Alito, and we had a private meeting. And I'll tell you, it was frightening. This guy was cold as ice. I saw that in about 50 cases, he had never ruled against a corporation when an individual or a consumer was doing this, and I thought there's no way that a person could get a fair shake. So, yes, began to see the difference, although I got to say I never imagined they'd go this far, Sam. I got to be honest with you. I couldn't believe. And the reason they go this far, Sam, is Trump. In other words, they're afraid to stand up because even people that are perfectly rational are terrified of losing their Senate seat or their House seat because they're going to stand up to Trump. That is the additional element that the cult of Trump has brought about.
But what Sam Alito doesn't have to be afraid of Donald Trump. Amy Coney Barrett doesn't have to be afraid of Trump. Brett Kavanaugh doesn't have to be afraid. Gorsuch, Thomas, they don't have to be afraid of Trump in their position.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if members of Congress and senators criticize what the court is doing, then we'll get it from Trump.
Fair enough.
You know, in other words, look at what just happened in Ohio with the primary. I mean, nothing strikes fear in the heart of some of these people more than being primaried out.
But to be clear, too, they're not just afraid of Trump. because, and you know this, because I know that you used to watch quite a bit of Fox News back in your day, specifically to see, you know, what they were saying.
That's but correct.
They're afraid of Trump. They're afraid of Mark Levin. They're afraid of Laura Ingraham. They're afraid of Tucker Carlson. They're afraid of Ben Shapiro. They're afraid of Steven Crowder. They're afraid of every single messaging outlet, everyone on Fox. They're afraid of all of it. They are completely outnumbered by a conservative. They're afraid of the Heritage Foundation. They're afraid of the Federalist Society. They're afraid we could go on and on and on. And all of these things were built before Donald Trump ever, you know, even before Donald right. Trump kissed Mitt Romney's ring, or
well, this is
the other way around.
This is precisely why I was thrilled to be asked to become president of the American Constitution Society, because it is the Federalist Society and their allies and the people that fund them that have gotten a huge jump start on creating this mechanism of linking up the media and the legal system and the law schools and everything into a juggernaut that, as you say, ultimately included Trump, but is not just about him. And after Trump, it would still exist. I mean, these people have agendas that are way beyond anything we could have imagined. Of course, we know about the gerrymandering. We see what they're doing in the Supreme Court. Actually, they're getting ready to try to call a constitutional convention to try to rewrite the Constitution, and they may get enough states to do it. And this is all funded by the same people, the people that were running around on January 6th around the Capitol. And leading that thing are some of the same people that are pushing for this constitutional convention. So the only way to really understand this is they're everywhere. And the only way to counter it is that we have to be everywhere, progressives and others who stand up to the right's unlimited agenda. This isn't the Republican Party. This is the far right having captured the Republican Party.
But that's the far right.
Maybe it's here or there. It's definitely something very different than we've ever seen before.
Well, yes, and this is not the Republican Party of 1870 either, and this is not the Democratic Party.
In some ways, it looks like it was some of this.
Well, but this is not the Democratic Party. This is not the Democratic Party of 1964. I mean, these are just these are just brands that, and sometimes you know, New Coke has a different flavor than the old Coke. I mean, this is the Republican Party now. The Republican Party. In the Democratic Party, they don't exist outside of, you know, where they are at that moment. I mean, from my opinion. And so you mentioned like that idea, like you didn't think they would do this. And certainly we have every one of these people who are voting to overturn Roe v. Wade on record. Video was invented at the time, saying to senator, this is settled law. Like, and there has been no new revelations about abortion, as far as I know, that would in any way change any of the calculations here whatsoever. As someone who sat on the Judiciary Committee, what's going through the minds of, and I'm assuming, like, you know, sort of people believed them at the time, or maybe they didn't, but how can we have a judicial hearing again with a nominee and believe any is even a relevant process now?
I mean, it'd be crazy to believe it. I mean, it is a practiced example of lying. And both Senator Collins and Senator Murkowski have expressed the outrage that they were promised that they would respect precedent. But frankly, they've been around the block a few times. They know darn well it's not what they were going to do. So, you know, it's really up to those senators, not after the fact, to say, well, you told me. What's their record? What's the whole rationale? Who supported them from the beginning? Who trained them from the beginning? So it's just naive to suggest that somehow, well, they broke their promise to me. And, you know, there shouldn't be any excuses for that, for people that, at least if they don't stand up to this now by doing something about it, by pushing for court reform and doing something to undo the theft of these Supreme Court seats, which is exactly what was done.
And part of it too is, I mean, and I think this is some of the work that you're doing, correct me if I'm wrong, is an alternative to the machine of conservative justices or judges, I should say, the Federalist Society, other groups as well, where Trump, any future Republican president, Bush as well, they're able to just pluck them from these groups that vet them, make sure they're as extremist and conservative as possible, and then they're placed onto the court. I mean, someone that comes to mind is the Trump-appointed justice who just overturned the federal mask mandate, who had very little experience and was but was a Trump appointee. Now Biden's done a good job of in record time making sure that some of these judges are confirmed, but there still is not there needs to be more of an infrastructure on the left to get judges appointed who can combat some of these far right judges in the country.
That's exactly what the American Constitution Society has built. That infrastructure not only exists, but is the main, we were the main group providing the names. Finally, something good news to talk about. We provided 600 names. We have 55 working groups across the country. This isn't the backdoor Federalist Society, big money groups. These are lawyers who go out to the community and say to the African-American community, the Latino community, the LGBTQ community, the labor community, who would you like to see as a judge? We gathered those names up gradually, vetted them, and immediately sent them to the White House within 2 hours of Biden being named the winner. And then when they came into office, as you suggest, they've done a great job. They have actually, they've confirmed 59 judges. I think it's 58 plus one at Supreme Court, of course, Ketanji. And they're overwhelmingly diverse majority, overwhelmingly female. And we have begun the process of starting to turn this around because we built an infrastructure that will not only for now, but for the future, that will constantly identify through our pipeline. We have like 40,000 members of the organization that will constantly do this in a much more democratic and appropriate way. And so these are life appointments, and it's going to be harder, yes, the rest of the year. But still, I think we're on track to be way ahead of the Trump administration after 2 years. Now, of course, if things don't go well in the election, that could stop. However, remember, even if we lose the House, if the Democrats lose the House, but maintain the Senate, this process can continue. That's all you need is the presidency and the Senate. So, yes, you have hit on a need. But this is what we do. This is what we're doing. And frankly, it's something that's very significant because this is one of the most important accomplishments of the Biden administration. This very strong presence of all these people, the diversity of background, and also the diversity of practice, many public defenders and others. So, yes, this the left finally and progressives understand this, and it is being built and has actually been built.
What do you think of when we've seen this recently? Senator Whitehouse has been over the past couple of months introducing the concept of who's been supporting some of these Supreme Court picks or just judicial picks under under Republican control, and now we're watching the Republicans sort of mimic this. This talking point that there are dark money groups that are driving this agenda. What's your take on that? I mean, mine is if only, but we had access to that type of resources. But I'm curious as to yours.
Well, first of all, Senator Whitehouse is doing tremendous work. You don't have to get me going on money and politics. It's not very hard to get me going on that, given my career and my work with John McCain. So what Senator Whitehouse is doing is something critical. He is tying contributions and money to the outcomes of Supreme Court cases. And sure, they're going to say, well, the people on the progressive side do the same thing. But as you say, the facts don't bear it out. That's not what I see on a daily basis. What I see is grassroots people who want good people on the court that look like them. And I don't see people bankrolling that in the same way. This is a completely, in my view, different process. I'm not saying there's not money on both sides, but the level of capture by the right and its money compared to the resources on the left, there's no comparison. And this has really tarnished the credibility of the Supreme Court, as Senator Whitehouse is pointing out.
I want to go back to the brief and the ruling, but let me just start with this, with going back to the assumption that this ends up being the ruling. What does the Supreme Court do when a woman comes to the court and says, I am a member of the conservative Jewish community or Reform Jewish community, and abortion is expressly allowed. I live in Texas, and abortion is expressly allowed. In fact, is not necessarily compulsory, but is it is encouraged if it is an inhibition on my health. And you are infringing, the state of Texas is infringing upon my right, my religious right, my religious freedom under RFRA, let's say. What are we going to see then?
Well, it's a good question. They're going to be in a bind because they've been pushing very hard on this religious freedom aspect, which at one level makes total sense, and another level is has been somewhat weaponized, and they may have to face it in the way that you just described. That will be a painful moment for them, but a moment that they deserve because they should just leave this up to the woman.
All right, let's get back to this. I want to ask you this question about the leak. What is your assessment of who might have leaked it and what the implications are in both internally with the Supreme Court, which I think gives us an indication who might have leaked it, and the political implications?
Well, first of all, of course, I have no idea who leaked it, so I'm not going to speculate on whether it was somebody from the right or the left or just somebody who wanted to cause trouble. So, look, I have sympathy for
it. Let me ask you this. Are you aware of the Wall Street Journal editorial that came out like 2 weeks ago, which I think most people are considering the first leak? It's the somehow the editors at the Wall Street Journal found out that there was a 5-4 decision, and that the five were getting a little wobbly, and somebody came and told them that. And yeah, it's possible that a left-leaning liberal justice's clerk was like, oh, the place for me to go for this to mobilize the left would be the Wall Street Journal. But that seems highly improbable. I mean, so it seems that we know that the first leak was from a conservative. The question is then who leaked the brief and why? What are the implications of that leak?
None of the leaks can be justified. It's the wrong thing to do. But any notion of equivalency between that and the reality of the rights of women of all this, the entire country being destroyed, there's no comparison. So, yes, whoever did this is wrong and should be punished proportionately. But it's really a distraction. Now, I feel bad for the employees over there who work hard every day to administer justice in the Supreme Court, people that may not be partisan at all. I feel bad, and I'm worried about how they're going to prevent this in the future. You know, we used to say in the Senate, Sam, that you go into caucus, it was off the record. And anybody who was stupid enough to think that was crazy. In other words, there was always going to be some staff member who went out and wanted to be friends with whoever the reporter was. Well, the sad thing is this is going to potentially make it so hard for the court to function because of the problem of this stuff being leaked. But it's nothing compared to the taking away the rights of the American people.
Well, I understand, but I'm curious as to what you think it would do if there was if the op-ed is to be believed and there was a five who had signed on to Alito's brief, but were wavering. They have the option of changing their mind. What does the leak of this do? I mean, do you have a sense of how that would impact a waffling member of that five?
You know, I don't know, but you know, I think it could be difficult. I mean, I honestly don't know which one would be waffling, and what I mean, given their commitment to this issue, it's kind of hard to believe that any one of them would get off. Maybe they would get off and then go with the Roberts approach, which, as you indicated, would be very, very bad as well. But I think they're fairly locked in. But naturally, this kind of additional element is inappropriate for the Supreme Court. It's entirely inappropriate, and it really undermines what is already a significantly delegitimized court. I mean, it's really in freefall.
And what do you think it does to the politics outside of the court?
Well, I'm sad to think that despite the fact that the court should be a certain kind of institution and people should be able to respect it, that it's going to be, is being perceived as just another political body in this country and part of the political wars. And that's so dangerous for our country. And I think it'll just be part of the larger, you know, binary politics in this country. And there's nobody that's going to really be able to say, look, can we at least just stop, you know, politicizing the Supreme Court? I'm afraid that's not going to happen. And they've this horrible mistake of undoing Roe v. Wade, if in fact they do it, will cause that to happen.
All right. Lastly, let me just ask you this way, then. Is this further undermining that legitimacy or changing the perception of something that was already illegitimate in many respects?
There was already a very serious problem with legitimacy, but this is a huge magnification of that. This puts it, you know, that this concrete kind of dramatic moment where this very harsh opinion comes out in advance crystallizes for a lot of people who pay no attention to this in a very understandable way that something's really wrong with the court. And so I do think this is an enormous leap in the direction of delegitimizing the court, and it's a tragic moment.
Senator Russ Feingold, the president of the American Constitution Society, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks. Good to be with you. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye now.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Perfect timing to head into the fun half of the program.
Have some fun.
I got to imagine he has some opinions about what it's going to do on the court. Although, you know, I guess maybe one needs to have been in the Supreme Court.
What's going to do on the court?
What the leak is going to do. Like if it will harden, it make it harder?
The opinion delegitimizes the court, not the leak.
Oh, no. I think the opinion, but I think the leak can help delegitimize it. And there seems to be this sort of like, what's that?
Great.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm in favor of that. But it will not happen if there is any type of like sort of I am quite sure that the likely outcome of this is that the right will have created the narrative that it was someone on the left who leaked it. And there will be no investigation that is thorough, and they will never find out. And it will have had the dual value of not delegitimizing the court because it was the left in, you know, the people who aren't really part of the court now. They're just there as spectators who were trying to overthrow the will of the court as manifested in the five who voted. And it will have also served the other purpose of making sure that no one on that five waffled from their original position. And, I mean, people got to remember, like, do people remember the vitriol towards John Roberts when he waffled on the ACA? This was, and the ACA was, you know, not the North Star of Republican politics for 40 years. And surely every member of that five, they don't want to be that guy. So, all right. We are going to head into the fun half of the program. Wherein, what's that?
The link is in the description, and I put it in chat.
Oh, yes.
As well.
The link is in the description, and it will automatically populate. And, folks, remember this. If you are a member and you want to see during the live show, we stream audio live, we stream video live. If you want to watch it live, you can watch it live. But if you are a member and you want to watch the show after the fact, you can always watch it on demand. As we call it?
And that's what we call it here.
On demand.
On demand.
Is that... I'm not going to make... Okay.
That's why we. That's why we get the big bucks to present this. Remember, like on demand.
On demand.
By logging into. We're going to develop other mechanisms for this, but the logging into the Majority Report site with your membership credentials, and at the top of every member post will be that day will be the link to the.
Yeah. And guys, just like you know, we're working through this, but say you're watching on your Apple TV and you're a member or your Roku, open it on your phone. You'll have it in your history and then just pull it up, right? So if you want to watch it on your TV, that's probably right now the easiest way to do that.
Or you got to learn how to cast on those things too. It's really useful if you have the YouTube app and the Roku app. There's a little like cast button that appears when you have it both connected to your Wi-Fi, and it's easy to cast it onto your television.
Well, what does that mean, cast it onto your television?
So like let's say I'm having basketball highlights on my phone and I'm watching on the YouTube app.
They have basketball highlights now on your phone?
It's way better than SportsCenter, honestly. so you hit this little button. It's like a square with like three lines or something like that. And you hit that and it gives you the options that are able to cast to. And if they're both connected to your Wi-Fi network, your Roku device, that should pop up there and you can just send it and it'll automatically bring up the YouTube app on that device and start playing it.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Just a reminder, the big live show
it's coming up
moved from January 16th to May 15th is coming up in less than 9 days. Since it's, well, it's actually, no, 9 days and 25 minutes. Countdown has begun. I just did the breakdown, sent that to the folks at the Wilbur. And it is going to be amazing. The show is going to be amazing. Already rated amazing. And you do not want to miss this show. You do not want to miss this show. Natalie Scherr, special guest. We have another. Yep. We have a special guest. Big guest.
The biggest guest.
That's a little bit of a clue.
It's Tom Trump.
It's no Donald
clues,
J. Trump.
Emma, said no clues. Said no clues.
I'm sorry.
Sam.
Ted Leo will be there with an awesome, like, the Bostonest band you could get. And he's going to be playing some tunes. We're going to have some folks from Extinction Rebellion there. It's going to be wild. It's going to be totally wild. You will enjoy it. And I will tell you right now, there's going to be at least, I think there's a good chance we're going to have a debate. So,
whoa.
Yep. That's all I'm saying.
Battlefield of ideas.
It is, well, maybe. So check it out. Go to majoritylive.com. We will not be streaming this live. We're going to record it. I'm not sure what we're going to do with it ultimately. But go to Majority Live. Also, AM Quickie. Get top stories in your email box every day, like thousands of you do. And what else we got? Join the Discord, majoritydiscord.com, and justcoffee.coop.
Fair trade
coffee, tea, or chocolate.
Nice,
use the coupon code Majority, get 10% off. You guys got Boston to play in Boston for the big live? Awesome to the max. But we got Ted has assembled a really great, awesome band. We'll talk more about that in the next couple of days. All right. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian Media universe?
Yeah, if you haven't yet, go back and check out Wednesday's episode of Left Wrecking. We had Robin Wansley on. She's the independent black socialist city council member in Minnesota's Ward 2. Just to read a couple of the comments, thank you for bringing this amazing woman. I was feeling mighty low. She is so inspiring, gave me life. Also, tremendous guest. The hype on MR was totally deserved. So Rob, and then the third, Robin is an incredible person. Thanks for the introduction to her. Yeah. Listening to her talk is so inspiring. It brought a year of joy to my eye. So I agree with all those comments.
Probably meant tear of joy.
A tear of joy, yeah.
Exactly. But I was going to say, a year of joy to my eye. I've never heard that expression.
Yeah.
That's a nice expression, too, if you think about it that way.
That is actually a great expression.
The joy is going to last a year.
Exactly. It's like in
in my eye.
It was a 50-minute interview, and we brought a year of joy to her eye. In that.
To her eye.
In 1080p. So.
A year-long twinkle.
Yeah, patreon.com/leftreckoning. We've got Jake from the Valley Labor Report on to talk about some union stuff and what YouTubers' role is in supporting unions and potentially criticizing them. But spoiler alert, it's not criticizing the Chicago Teachers Union for taking COVID too seriously. So patreon.com/leftreckoning for that.
Folks, see you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What?
What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Unpacked. Matt.
Who?
Unpacked. What is up, everyone?
Unpacked.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Unpacked.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Unpacked. Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop. Talking oh, for wow. a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start
off. Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3551. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about yeah. you is just like every day, all day, like yeah. everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow.
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.